B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
All right, let's talk some football issues. Because we haven't talked to this man since the Eagles were eliminated, and now we get the Final Four in the NFL. So let's bring in the great ESPN NFL reporter, Sal Palantonio. He's brought to us by Conkerville Nissan. Hello, Sal Pal. Yeah. How's it going?
How are you, Mike?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm sorry about last week. I was in Canton, Ohio for a three-day conference and meeting to pick the centennial slate for the Football Hall of Fame.
See, you're a big shot. So, you know, we get you.
I don't know about that.
We get you when we can.
Yeah, it was really an honor to serve. It was an honor, obviously, to be asked to serve on the committee. And, you know, John Madden, Bill Belichick, Ozzie Newsome, Bill Polian, and, you know, just great people from all over the game to be able to sit and talk. It was a long meeting. It was 3 days, but tomorrow the announcement for the Hall of Fame. So we're looking forward to the announcement.
All right. Sounds good. Now, let's rehash now. The end of the season happened with the Philadelphia Eagles. They lost to the Seattle Seahawks. The quarterback gets hurt. And at that point, you were, you know, kind of hoping that something miraculous would happen, but deep inside that maybe they weren't going to have enough to do it. So where does this season leave you as far as the evaluation of what the Eagles are?
Well, Mike, I've had obviously a lot of time to think about this, just specifically to come on your program, which I feel honored to be part of. And I've made four specific headlines that I would like to make sure that you and I understand and that I communicate. And one is, if Carson Wentz doesn't get hurt, the Eagles win the game.
I agree with you. Totally agree.
1,000%. Doesn't get hurt, they win the game. They were one score away three times, specifically in the second half, twice, one score away from winning a football game with a backup quarterback who had one leg, with Greg Ward and Josh Perkins and Boston Scott and the rest of that group of valiant young men. So they are one score away. That's headline number two. Headline number three for me is they need to look hard in the mirror about how they make personnel decisions. And they have to stop doing it from a sense of emotion. There has to be more intellectual honesty when they approach these decisions. It took Greg Ward way too long to get on the field, specifically. It took Boston Scott way too long. They should have cut ties with Darren Sproles a long time ago. That's just two examples right there. And number three, and this may shock you, but I won't let any scout from the Eagles west of the Mississippi. If you can't pick SEC players or Big Ten players or ACC players, then go back to the drawing board and fire another one.
So get the Pac-12. No more Pac-12, guys.
No, Michael, no more. That's not funny.
I hear you. I saw the talent level in that game last night.
Why is that funny to you?
No, I hate Pac-12 players. I've been saying it for years.
How many Pac-12 players have they hit on in the last 5 years?
None of them.
Zach Ertz, maybe, but he's more than 5 years.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
You watched that game last night.
Yeah.
There's 20 NFL players on the field.
Yep.
Okay, maybe I'm exaggerating. There's a dozen NFL players on the field.
Speed and power.
I mean, I just covered, I was down in Baltimore, and I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to lollygag myself down to Baltimore. I'm going to cover the divisional round. I'm going to have the AFC championship there. Me and John Harbaugh are going to have a couple of crab cakes. We're going to hang out, no problem. They get steamrolled by an SEC player from Alabama, Derrick Henry, who's literally a freight train playing medieval football. I mean, he is Old Testament football on skates.
So Sal Powell's in the draft review on a SEC primarily.
No. I don't see how that's funny.
No, I'm agreeing with you. That's why I'm laughing.
Then you look at the other side of the ball for Tennessee. Their first-round pick at middle linebacker, Rasheen Evans, is going sideline to sideline and dragging down Lamar Jackson like he is a cheetah dragging down an antelope on the African safari. I mean, you got two Alabama players, one on offense and one on defense, absolutely destroying the number one seed that's 14-2. Michael, you're not. Nobody gets past the Mississippi River without a
permission card. I happen to agree with you. We'll get to that draft a little later. I want to double back because I haven't had a chance to talk to you about the odd press conference that Doug Peterson delivered and said that those guys will be back and the next day they're fired. What was the dynamic there that you can see with Jeffrey Lurie getting involved?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little overblown. I think the bottom line is they make a decision together, the three of them, all the time. Peterson, Lurie, and Roseman with Andy Wydell, you know, on the flanks. That everything that they do is organizational. So, and you know, I have a special relationship with Doug, but I don't think that Doug has the final call on anything.
What do you think he was trying to do there?
I think everything is made organizationally. And they've really worked well in that regard. They all talk to each other. They all talk very frankly with one another. Peterson doesn't hold anything back, I'm told, in the conversations that he has with Lurie and or Roseman, and vice versa. They have very frank and honest conversations, but in the end, organizationally, they make the decision. And the bottom line, I don't know exactly what went down specifically with this decision, but you and I know that they had to make a change at offensive.
Yeah, no, what I'm getting to, I guess, is...
I know, and I don't have an answer for you. I really don't. You're asking me to decipher the tea leaves here, and all I'm telling you is I think Doug was wrong to say that he made the decision on his own to fire his offensive coordinator, that clearly he had input from Roseman and Lurie. Clearly, we can establish that, right? We can say
yeah,
that
so you're sure. are you saying that he did know that those guys were going to go and he was just trying?
I don't know about that. Whether it was before the meeting or after the meeting, all I know is that they make these decisions organizationally. Now, what I'm saying to you that now going forward, they need to make some harder choices and be a little bit more honest with themselves about things. Josh McCown was a good coach, but he wasn't a good backup to Carson Wentz. Anybody else, I mean, I don't think I'm out on a limb here, and you probably have said this in the last 2 weeks. I think Greg Ward would have done a better job in the red zone than Josh McCown with one leg. Don't you?
No. I would have just thrown. See, that's too desperate to throw him into a situation like that. I hear where you're going with it.
Throw him into a situation like that. Play quarterback in college, and I'm sure they practiced a bunch of plays with him. That's not throwing him into a situation.
Yeah, I just
was thrown into a lot of situations.
Maybe you're right. I don't know. Maybe you're right. It just seemed a little unnatural to me. Let's move on to they have to hire a coordinator now, right? And so I'm wondering if the coordinator that's worth the salt is not going to want to come in and take a back seat like Mike Groh did. Is that who they will look for?
I know who they should look for. It's simple. Deuce Staley.
Okay.
I think they should promote Deuce Staley. Deuce Staley is ready. They already have Jeff Stoutland running the running game. Deuce Staley should be the offensive coordinator for a lot of reasons. One, he has the respect of the locker room. Two, he has the respect of the quarterback. Three, he has the respect of the head coach. Four, he has the respect of the owner and the front office. And will he have to learn some things on the job? Yes. Will he be calling plays? No. He's basically going to be.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense, though.
Hold on a second. Hold on a second. He's going to be the Eric Bieniemy to Doug Peterson.
All right.
Just like Bieniemy judged for Andy Reid.
I'm okay with that.
Andy Reid taught Doug Peterson, and Doug Peterson turned into a Super Bowl coach. Andy Reid is teaching Eric Bieniemy. And Bieniemy should have been given opportunities to be a head coach right now.
I agree.
And I think Deuce Staley, without a doubt, 1,000% should be promoted. Don't look outside the organization. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. And then, for a wide receivers coach, I would find somebody who played wide receiver at the NFL level. Whoever that person is.
All right.
He needs to have the respect of the locker room and the players.
We got to run.
You do?
Yes.
We just got started.
I know you did.
But you just got started asking me interesting
questions. I know, but we got these commercials. Can I tell you? Thanks, brother.
All right, well, maybe we should talk more than just every other thing.
We will. I'll call you. All right, see you. That's South Val.
Yes, he is. Brought to us by Conkerville Nissan.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.